Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the start of the football season. The NFL season. College football is underway, but NFL starts tonight. Buffalo and the Rams, and we have uninterrupted NFL football right through the middle of February. Oh, it's glorious news, Mark Schlereth. Good morning.
It is. It's great news. Cannot wait for kickoff tonight. Buffalo, everybody's darling, the Buffalo Bills versus the world champion, L.A. Rams. I mean, it doesn't get any better, man. I'm so excited for the start of this season. I'm so excited for the Broncos to take the field on Monday night. I'm just excited for kickoff, man. It's going to be great.
Yes, we're excited, but the season will start under a bit of a cloud. Did you see the bombshell article written at ESPN by Seahawks reporter Brady Henderson, which goes into the split between Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, the relationship between Russell and Pete Carroll? It sheds some light on a lot of stuff that we've been talking about for months, some new stuff that came out in it. Brady Henderson was on The Fan yesterday with Stokely and Zach, and he said that it pretty much boiled down. He said, quote, "The simplest way to put it is both sides reached a point where they wanted to move on. I think the knee-jerk reaction when observers saw this was that Russell forced his way out of Seattle and that it was a situation where he wanted out and the Seahawks weren't able to convince him to change his mind. That's not what happened at all." And that what it, a lot of it is, and, you know, when we start talking about this, I never really bought the idea that Russell Wilson's entourage and the fact that he was into brand building was enough of a reason for the Seahawks to move on from this guy. And when you read this very detailed, deeply reported piece, there's no talk about the off-the-field stuff and entourages and Sierra and all that stuff. It's all about the perception that the Seahawks ultimately felt that Russ is a declining player.
Well, that's great. And, you know, there's always a bit of revisionist history in there, Mike, in those articles. And I get it. When you source an article, you're sourcing somebody's opinion, you know, within the organization. I can tell you this. I can tell you that I have talked to people that work within that organization that told me the entourage and the hotel rooms and it wore on them. That's not even the whole thing. It's having to you walk into it without any of that stuff as a third round pick, a guy that's just trying to make a team. And then the next thing, it becomes that. And then it's really about losing. And this is, to me, like, hey, man, you can read that article and you can, you know, you can think it's gospel. And it is from somebody's perspective, right? There's your opinion. There's my opinion. And then there's the truth, right? There's your version of it. There's my version of it. And then somewhere in the middle lies the truth. And that's for any situation when it comes to the way things work in general. But, you know, you go through all that stuff and then it becomes, you've got to listen to other players complain about, hey, the preferential treatment. And then the big thing to me with organizations is organizations get their feelings hurt. organizations don't like that their people get circumvented in that process. And it goes back to, listen, if Tom Brady gets run out of town because Alex Guerrero is an issue, the reason Alex Guerrero is an issue is because the other player is like, wait a minute, how is this 40-whatever-year-old staying healthy and still playing at this level? I'm going to go see his guy, you know, as opposed to seeing our people. And that pisses people off. I'll just give you a quick aside story, okay? When I was playing in Washington, man, I had all kinds of injury issues, right? And I went in an off season, and I needed knee surgery, another knee surgery, and an elbow surgery. And I was hurt, man. It was bad. And I chose to circumvent our doctors and go down to James Andrews in Birmingham, Alabama. Now, you know, James Andrews is, at that time, he was the doctor of choice of pretty much every professional athlete in America, right? That's what he was known for. So I go down there and have the surgery. I come back to Washington, I'm rehabbing, and I ask our head trainer, hey, man, I'm out of Indocin, which is a anti-inflammatory at the time that was readily available and very, very used. And that was before before the NFL got cracked down on and federally investigated for handing out whatever you needed, right? It was just a different time in the NFL. So I go to our trainer and say, man, I'm out of Indocin, I need some more. And he said, why don't you effing call your doctor to get you some?
And this is a guy you've worked with for how long?
He's a friend.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Right? But that's how sensitive organizations are. So you can take that article for what it's worth. I don't know what the paper it's printed on is worth, but whatever that is worth, that's what it's worth to me. Because there is, and I guarantee you there's a ton of truth in it, but there's a ton of stuff in that is from one side's perspective, right?
Oh, sure. This is a Seahawks reporter now. This is
right.
Seahawks, so he's not gonna burn every bridge out there.
Right, and I guarantee you there's no question they feel that way. And they have every right to feel that way. But to sit there, okay, to sit there and say, and here's an issue, to sit there and say, hey, man, it was Russell declining. So a better option for us is Drew Locke, or a better option for us is Geno Smith.
Well, or looking into Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, which is a big part of the article. Tell you what, we're going to have time to parse through all this throughout the course of the show.
Okay.
But we also want to give you a chance to hear the best of Joel Klatt, which we always do, because Joel brought it yesterday. You missed out. Thanks to Orlando Franklin for staying in.
I meant to ask about, I wanted to have you ask a question for me because it was something I was prepping in my game, and I was I need Joel's opinion on this.
Well, you can reach out to Joel. I'm sure he'll give you his opinion off the side. But he was really, we could talk about what went wrong with Russell Wilson in Seattle, but there's also the matter that Russell Wilson's here, and he's our quarterback, and he's playing Seattle on Monday. But there's parts of what the Broncos have set up to go this year that Joel is not happy with, and he used some strong language in describing his unhappiness, and you'll hear it next.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
You know, as always, we want to make sure the great 6 a.m. listeners get a chance to hear the best of our conversation with Joel Klatt, because most weeks Joel brings it, and yesterday was certainly no difference, as he was outstanding, bringing the heat, as I asked him, who's going to get the blame if the Broncos don't make the playoffs this year?
Oh, there's no doubt. Nathaniel Hackett would get all of the blame. I mean, Russell Wilson got his contract, folks. Like, this, it's not going on Russell Wilson. Maybe it would go on, and I know O won't like this, but maybe it would go on the offensive line. But then, in turn, that would land on, you know, George Payton, and it would land on Nathaniel Hackett. It would land on the game plan. So everybody outside of the players is going to be getting the blame in this scenario. The roster, they feel like, is good enough to make the playoffs. They've made the moves necessary. I don't know what kind of poker Orlando plays, but I push chips into the middle of the table, not eggs. It feels like it would be messy if they broke. But, I mean, that's...
They got me up early, Joe. They got me up early.
thinking about eggs. It's at 8 in the morning.
I missed my breakfast this morning.
I remember those days. I remember having to watch the worst baseball of my life, you know, Rockies games until God knows when, and then coming in there and looking at Mike's huge head. But eggs and poker is something else. That's, you know, that's dangerous.
I'm not a poker player. I was just thinking about breakfast.
Yeah, understandable.
Hey, Joel.
Good for you. Now I'm hungry.
Joel, is this team prepared for what's about to happen? You know,
that's a good question.
We talk about, you know, the fact that Russell's going back to Seattle, but Seattle is a very hostile environment, and it's going to be extra loud, the fact that Russell was there for a decade, and now he's not there, and a lot of the fan base is like, good riddance, and you hear, you know, Russell's old teammate Tyler Lockett pleading with the fans, please remember how much he's done for the community and how many games we won. Please don't kind of boo him. He's a great person. But is this team and this coaching staff kind of ready for the most hostile environment in the NFL?
No. I think that that's a simple answer. I think that they are not ready. And judging by how they approached the preseason, like they had won 7 Super Bowls together and have a long history. And boy, you know, we know exactly what we're doing, so don't worry about it. I know this is going to sound, you know, harsh, but I was kind of appalled with the way they handled
appalled
the season. Listen, you've got no history, Mike. Mike, you've got no history. There are no reps together. This is a game of repetitions and confidence, and the only way to gain that confidence is through the repetitions. You know, it was shocking how they handled the preseason. I don't think that they're going to be ready for Monday night. And yet, they have to win.
Well, there would
not be more pressure on Denver on Monday night. You cannot roll into Seattle and lose to Geno Smith. I don't care if it's on the road. I don't care if it's Nathaniel Hackett's first game. I don't care. You traded for this guy. You got him. You signed him to the massive deal. You feel like you've got a roster that can go to the playoffs. Seattle's not a great roster. Can't go lose to Geno Smith.
Would it have been different if they would have started this season off like with the second half of the season? If they were starting it with Tennessee, Las Vegas, Carolina, and you had the Baltimore coming up and the KC, do you think they would have approached it differently the preseason?
I'm not sure. I think that this was in the back of Nathaniel Hackett's mind forever, you know, as he rolled through. I think as a younger coach, I think he was highly influenced by Aaron Rodgers' approach to the game, which was clearly, you know, at least when it comes to a preseason, kind of a, hey, relax type of a deal. You know, let's roll in like Nicolas Cage and Con Air. I think he was highly influenced by that. And why wouldn't you? You just saw Aaron Rodgers win a couple of MVPs and see the level that he played. So I just think that this was the way that he wanted to do it once he got his chance. And I, for one, disagree with it. Now, I could be wrong, and I hope I am, guys. I really hope I am. And I hope Denver goes out there and plays a great game and that they're hitting on all cylinders. But I come back to this. They have to win. Guys, like, I don't know how else to put it. Can you imagine sitting in those seats on Tuesday morning if Geno Smith beats the Broncos?
We're not going to talk to you again until next Wednesday. The game will have been played. So right now, as we sit here, do you think they win Monday?
I don't know, man. I don't know. If I would have seen any semblance of execution, detail, cohesiveness during the course of the preseason, I would have been fairly confident because I think Denver's the better team. They obviously have the better quarterback, but we didn't see any of that. So I don't know. Do you? Like, does anyone, if anybody tells you that they know, I think that they're lying because we haven't seen it. We don't know what this is going to look like. What? So if you pinned me down and you said, like, hey, man, you got to bet, you know, whatever, 10 grand, 50 grand, I don't know where I'm going. I have no idea.
It sounds like you're not more concerned of, like, the, like, a lot of people have been concerned about the depth or the inside linebacker position, but it sounds like it's, like, the continuity. It's the timing of things when you're talking about this, Joel.
I've always thought, and I think that you would probably agree with me, that the most difficult thing in football to achieve is a real high level of execution on the offensive side. And the reason is because there's so many factors, though, as you know. There's obviously the detail. You've got to have guys, you know, 15, 16 guys, depending on the depth of the skill positions, that are really locked into the details of what you're trying to execute, the details of the formation, the details of the game plan. And then you've got to have guys that are technicians, and they understand fundamentally how to go execute those details and influence the defense. And I think that that's very difficult to do. Then there's the timing aspect and the cohesiveness of doing it together. Remember, offensive football, it is the most brutal ballet that you're ever going to be a part of. You want to be brutal in your physicality and stealing the will of your opponent and impressing upon them what you want to do. And yet it has to be done in the most beautiful and succinct ballet possible, because timing and spacing are so important. And the only way that you can do that is through reps. That's it. That's it. There is no easy workaround to playing great on offense. You've got to do it together for a long time in order to have that cohesiveness. Defense is a different animal. As you know, defensive linemen, they're the dumbest guys on the planet. Right, left, that's it. Where's my gap? Oh, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Defenses, all they got to do is line up and then run fast. Like, it's all about effort. You line up, and then you're like, okay, well, like, I got to go. And then everyone's like, oh, leverage, keep your outside arm free. That's it. That's all they got to do. It's like, so one guy sets the edge, and then everyone runs hard and tackles. Defensive players, they drive me nuts. And, you know, like, defensive tackles, I'm sorry, I love you, but geez, right, left, that's all they need to know. Offense is different. It's a beautiful, brutal ballet. It's got to be succinct. It's got to be cohesive. And it's got to work together. And that's why I'm nervous for the Denver Broncos.
All right, visiting with Joel Klatt. He's presented by Audi Flatirons, our weekly visit with Joel. So, it's clear. You're not endorsing the way that the Broncos prepared for the season on offense. So, how long will it take into the season to get to the point where you'll feel comfortable about it?
So, this is why I'm not endorsing what they did in the preseason, is because nobody knows. You don't know how long it's going to take that unit to gel. It could be very quickly. It could take a few weeks. You don't know. And in particular with a new coaching staff, you know, if this was just one new piece and it was like, hey, there's this staff, there's this cohesiveness, and then you're going to plug in, you know, a great running back, or you're going to plug in Russell Wilson, you feel like you can take off, then that's one thing, because there's still some history there of execution and detailed play. This is all new. So the bottom line is, I don't think anybody knows how long this will take. I think it can happen very quickly because they've got a veteran at the quarterback spot, because he, at least in his history in the NFL, has played very well. He's a guy that's going to hold the standard for the other players. So you would hope that it doesn't take that long, but there's no telling. There's no rhyme or reason of how long it takes.
There he is. Joel Klatt visits with us each and every week. The best of Joel. We bring it to you, 6 a.m. listeners. Up next, we got the Morning Bruin on the heels of ESPN putting together a bombshell piece explaining why Seattle may have tired with Russell Wilson. Comes another prominent NFL voice who thinks big things are ahead for Russ this year. Details in the Brew next.
It's time for your Morning Brew. Grab a cup of Joe and get caught up on everything you need to know. Here's Schlereth and Evans.
Well, I think it is just their what they always say is what is Pete's book? Compete every day. Like, this is what we do. We look for Richard Sherman's replacement. We look for Cam and Earl's replacement. We look for, yeah, that's just the NFL. It's what we do. We compete. Now, we pay you top dollar, and you got paid twice top dollar. So they reward those guys. They don't just, you know, they're not cheap and that cold-blooded and cold-hearted. But, yeah, they look for the next Russell Wilson, the next Bobby, the next Richard, the next all of them.
Well, that's Brock Huard, who is going to be part of all of our shows throughout the course of the season. He's with our sister station in Seattle, former quarterback, and really great insight. In fact, he is quoted extensively in this ESPN article that details the falling out between Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, and the Seahawks. And he's talking about how in 2017, the Seahawks were interested in Patrick Mahomes, and then a year later, Josh Allen. And you heard Brock Huard's explanation of how Seattle looked at it, Mark. Well, according to this article, Wilson's camp had a different view. Quote a Seahawks front office source, they were bleeping pissed.
Yeah. Yeah, right? I mean, you're a 9-time Pro Bowler. You know, think about where he's come from. Yeah, are you upset when you have that attitude, or when you're always looking like, this is why I always tell young guys, you know, during the football season, go into the facility at Tuesday and see how many guys they're working out to take your job. Because they're constantly working on it, Mike. They're constantly, you have to know that. But
a 29-year-old quarterback, Russell Wilson at the time, a 29-year-old quarterback, coming off a season in which he led the NFL in touchdown passes,
sure,
which was a career high.
But
that's when you want to send him a message?
Well, you know, you don't want to send him a message. It's your organizational arrogance. Your organizational arrogance said, hey, we got a third rounder. We turned him into a superstar in our system under our tutelage. And that's just what we do. I mean, think about it. You know, Richard Sherman, who's one of the great corners that we've had in the last decade plus, he's a fifth rounder. You know, where was Cam Chancellor drafted? I don't know, but I'm sure he wasn't a first rounder. You know, was Bobby Wagner a second rounder? Because he's going to be a Hall of Famer. I mean, think about when you've had that success. And they have. They've missed on a bunch of first rounders, Mike. They have. But they've had a bunch of success later on. So there becomes this organizational arrogance that, hey, man, under my expert tutelage, man, I can make, you know, chicken salad out of you know what.
Next on the morning brew. Next on the morning brew.
Yeah, sorry.
My pick for MVP this year, I'm going with Russell Wilson. The Broncos have gotten their guy, and the Broncos are going back to the playoffs because of this guy. Denver is one of the best football towns. Denver is an awesome football town. It's been silent for nearly 7 years. It is time for the Denver Broncos to rise up. It is time for the city of Denver to not only just have an amazing hockey and basketball team, but to have a football team once again. I'm going with Russell Wilson, and I will give you two words. Let's rock.
Let's go.
Peter Schrager from Good Morning Football, right on the heels of this ESPN piece that says Seattle believes Russell Wilson's in decline. Peter Schrager does not agree, as he is making Russell Wilson his MVP vote. Wow. So, somebody's going to look real bad here. Somebody's going to look real bad when this is all over. And boy, I hope it's Seattle, because you get there when you again, this, and we're going to be parsing through this article throughout the course of the morning. But the main reason, at least in this article, the main reason that they're moving on from Russell Wilson is they think he's a quarterback in decline, and that you may get a year or two of good quarterback, maybe 1 year great quarterback play, but ultimately this is a guy who's in decline.
Yeah, kind of like Brady's in decline for the last 12 years.
This article read so much to me like the big piece that came out near the end of the Brady run in New England, mm-hmm. which was a Seth Wickersham had a detailed breakdown into what went on in the final days of the Brady-Kraft Belichick relationship. This felt so much like that.
We're still here!
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We're going to find out, right? I just find it hard to believe. Like, in the narrative, and this again comes from, like, I understand players lie all the time. I mean, I lied all the time, right? No, I never felt better. Man, I feel great. Meanwhile, I feel like absolute hammered poop, you know, and just feel like garbage. Oh, but I'm going to tell you I feel great, Mike. Hey, man, the healthiest I've ever been. feel great coming into training camp. Yeah, just completely lying, like both sides of my mouth. But the bottom line is, when you sit there and say, hey, man, player in decline, come on. Really, that's, I mean, so he's been in decline since he was in his you know, late 20s. In today's game, and I believe this, man, you don't start hitting your prime until you're in at the quarterback position. You don't start hitting your prime until you're 32, 33, 34. The way guys are playing right now and the way they're protecting these guys, come on, stop it with the, hey, he's got 1 year left, maybe two tops. That's just garbage.
Next in the Morning Brew.
I play with my heart. I was willing to do whatever, put it on the line and go and try to get a win, make the crowd roar, make the plays necessary. And truthfully, the motivation was to buy my grandma a house, get my grandma out of poverty. It was a lot of stuff that was built in within me, that 175 pounds. That was the weight that people didn't see on my shoulders, and that's how I played the game. But like I said, I don't look like your normal NFL. Well, now I probably do. But back then, they would say, oh, he's a slot receiver. But I made the transition to the outside, and I came here, and we did something special.
I'd say so. Emmanuel Sanders retiring as a Bronco after five and a half really, really productive and at the beginning just superb seasons with the Broncos. 1,400, 1,100, 1,000-yard receiving seasons his first 3 years here. Very productive receiver everywhere he went. Question that was going around yesterday, is Emmanuel Sanders a Ring of Famer?
No.
Why not?
Because he's not. Like, what do you want me to say? Does he compare to Rod Smith? Does he compare to DT? Does he compare to, like...
Does he compare to John Lynch? And I'm sorry, once you, and this is the problem with Hall of Fames, Ring of Fames, whatever. Once you establish a precedent, you can't walk it back. You establish a precedent with John Lynch. Emmanuel Sanders was just as productive, more productive, and he was part of a Super Bowl winner. John Lynch wasn't. So if John Lynch is in the Ring of Fame, Emmanuel Sanders belongs in the Ring of Fame.
Yeah, I think you jumped the shark with John Lynch in the Broncos Ring of Fame.
Well, unless you're going to take him down, you've established that precedent.
Well, then, I mean, but that precedent you established.
Are you going to put an asterisk up beside it now?
You should put everybody in then. I want to be in the Ring of Fame then.
Well, let's do it.
If John Lynch is in there, I want to be in there. If Emmanuel Sanders goes in, I want to go
in. All right, fair enough. Let's do it. Hey, we're going to have
I'll start my own freaking campaign.
We're going to have a big new shiny stadium here within a decade. So maybe we can add in extra room for it. That's the Morning Brew right there. Bring that to
I don't want to go in there, Mike. You know what? I changed my mind.
I know. You'd be so shy about doing the acceptance speech.
No, can you imagine? They'd have to postpone the third quarter.
Guys, listen.
Wait. Teams, go back in. I'm not done yet. I'm talking about my favorite subject right now, which is me. You guys are going to have to go in. We're going to delay the third quarter kickoff.
Listen, we're not even through the Idaho. Gentlemen,
the great Mark Schlereth.
We're not even through the Idaho years. So we're going to be here right. Wow. Everyone buckle in. Coming up, we continue to parse through this ESPN bombshell article. And is it a piece that is unfair and slanted against Russell Wilson? That's next.
You're listening to Schlereth and Evans on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Mark Schlereth, let's test your memory a little bit.
Okay, great.
Because I want to see if you remember, first of all, and second of all, are honest enough to remember how I have said on multiple occasions that Russell Wilson's desire to leave Seattle was in large part fueled by being at the Super Bowl that Tom Brady won with Tampa and watching what Brady had to do. You've heard me say that many times, right? So, So in this article that was written at ESPN talking about the breakup between Russell Wilson and Seattle, it started with that moment, that game. And Russell Wilson at the game sitting next to Roger Goodell. And remember I said to you, I said, did you see the look on Wilson's? He had this serious, there was a look in his face that was like, wow, I want that. I want what Brady got in Tampa. I want to have a team built around me. I want to be able to have a say in how this team is built, how the offense is built. And I sensed at that moment watching Wilson a real sense of envy. Really, truly, envy of what Tom Brady had been able.
You're sure this isn't revisionist history, or this really?
No, do you remember me? You know I said it. Anyway,
listen. My memory is not. You're trying to get invited to a beach day on I Told You So Island, and I'm not ready. I'm just not ready to go ahead and invite you over.
I'm trying to break through get through Riptide Beach, but you know, and some of you listening know I have said that, but when you talk about it, and I want to give you credit. Because you have said repeatedly,
finally, I had to wade through all the crap about you. I was getting sleepy. All right, now let's talk about me. Yeah. Go.
Exactly, your favorite subject. But you've always said that this was a constant tug and pull between Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, and Pete Carroll's belief that we can win the way that we won early. And that the idea that Russell Wilson needs to let Russ cook or to, encourage the idea of, hey, run around and extend plays and try to make plays, that was something that always bothered Pete.
Yeah.
And was really, quite honestly, the reason that Seattle ultimately cooled and was willing to trade this guy.
Yes, but let me just say this, Mike, because I think you bring up a couple of really good points, but the whole Russ Cook thing, I think there's a misconception that let Russ Cook was created by Russ.
Well, before you go, all right, this was the summer of the whole let Russ Cook thing that started to take off, okay? And this was going into the 2020 season.
Okay.
And this is Russell Wilson in a quote. Going into year 9, I'm trying to break away. I want to be the best in the world to ever do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that season, remember, he started out fast and was the leading favorite for the MVP race.
Right.
And then he went through a stretch.
The first 8 weeks.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then they went on a stretch where they went 1-3, and he turned the ball over 10 times. In those four games that they went 1-3, and again, in this article, a quote, one source in the Seahawks front office, what are we doing here? Are we trying to win games or are we trying to win the MVP? And at that point, Carroll pulled the plug on the whole let Russ cook. And here's a stat for you. After dropping back to pass more than any team over the first 10 weeks of that season, the Seahawks ranked 15th in design pass rate over the final seven. He pulled back. He pulled back. Pete Carroll pulled back on the idea of letting Russ cook.
Yeah. I understand that. But that, to me, the whole let Russ cook thing was not so much a Russell Wilson thing. It was a media creation, at least the phraseology. Opening up the offense and doing those things, let's face it, at that particular point in time... Holy Moses.
Never mind. You're done. You're done.
Uh-oh.
You're done. You need a timeout. Okay? Because I know you. You're luggage now, the rest of this. You're done. You're done.
You know what I was just thinking? I was trying to come up with my teammate on Fox, Greg Olson, and I'm like, how can I not remember Greg Olson's name?
Oh, man.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
I just had Patrick Waugh flashbacks right there.
I know. I just dropped an S-bomb.
Wow.
I
mean, woo.
Okay. Sorry, Johnny.
Well, Johnny moved quickly.
Johnny saved me, though, right?
Fever?
He moved quickly.
Fever, you save him? Did you save him? Good job. The Fan job, War Room Fever. Season Preview Special. It's going on today at noon. Of course, we'll have Stoke and Zach hosting. It'll be today at noon from Brothers Barbecue off I-25 in Arapaho. Orlando Brown. See, it's becoming contagious.
It's contagious.
Chad Brown. And No Sean Moreno will be joining Stoke and Zach again. That's between noon and 2. Four Down Territory is next.
The season opener.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.